Hey everyone, Arjun here. Just a quick note before we start this week's episode, which is about the shit show that is UK politics at the moment. Of course, since recording and the release of this episode, Liz Truss is no longer the Prime Minister and is now the former Prime Minister of the UK. She has handed in her resignation after just 44 days in number 10. And of course, we discuss many things other than just her, and as you will see in the episode as well, some of the things that have developed since her resignation are things that we also predicted might very well happen. In any case, I'm sure that there will be much more content at the very least over the next few weeks that we will, I'm sure, revisit as well in some capacity or other. But in any case, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Leftover. This is Arjun, and I'm joined today by very special guest, returning guest in fact. It is none other than Mick Wright. How you doing? Thanks so much
hey
for joining.
man. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm just sitting here seeing who's gonna tumble out of the government next.
Whether the lettuce is indeed going to outlast our current Prime Minister. We are in a bit of a situation right now where, I mean, I postponed the recording of this podcast by an hour, and within that hour, the Home Secretary Suella Braverman has resigned, and we are currently in that state where, like, just we're recording this on a Wednesday, and by the time this comes out on Friday. You know, Liz Truss herself might very well be gone. You know, like it's hard to tell. It is that kind of a situation with the UK government at the moment. Bit of a. I mean, did you see the Braverman thing coming yourself, Mick?
No, not at all. I mean, the thing about this is, it's what she said she's resigned for is accidentally sending a sensitive email using a private email account, which she shouldn't have done, and it's a breach of the ministerial code. But this is some absolute, like, Wile E. Coyote plotting on her part, because it seems quite transparent to me, especially when you look at her resignation letter, that she's done this on purpose. So that she can then say, look, I've made a mistake and I'm resigning. Not enough people in the government are doing that. So she said, she said in her resignation letter, she said, the business government relies upon people accepting responsibility for their mistakes, pretending we haven't made mistakes, carrying on as if everyone can't see that we've made them, and hoping that things will magically come right is not serious politics. It's so obvious.
Throwing, like, shade.
Yeah, it could not be more obvious she's done this on purpose. It's so clown, like, clown college. I'm surprised she's not, you know, falling over her giant shoes as she waddles out of the Home Office. Of course, the British political press are acting as if this isn't, you know, transparently what she's done. Oh, well, you know, she broke the ministerial code, as if that's mattered at all, you know, in the past 12 years.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, amazingly, under her resignation on Twitter, you have Tim Farron. I'm gonna find the reply. It's incredible. with his wallet fully out, you know, open for inspection. My man is out here saying, if this is what actually will happen, then this does take it. This does at least look like a welcome return to people who mess up in high office, taking personal responsibility for their mistakes, which is admirable. Or am I being massively naive?
Tim, it's
people,
option
like
B.
They will never ever learn, will they? but yeah, I mean, Suella Braverman, who herself was, of course, like, the third
in a row of like increasingly authoritarian Desi like home secretaries. Like we went from Sajid Javid to Preeti Patel to Suella, and it's just really just like gone increasingly authoritarian, essentially, increasingly more fascist. And Suella was like, I mean, this is a woman who, you know, like, has you know, openly, you know, talked about, you know, sending people to Rwanda and whatnot. And she, I mean, she would very much kind of embody the very worst excesses of the things that even Preeti Patel would talk about. You know, I mean, she kind of like, she makes Preeti Patel look like something of a moderate. Which
she said it was her dream
yeah.
to see a deportation flight to Rwanda on the front exactly. page of the Daily Telegraph. it just, you know...
Actual psychopaths. But yeah, I mean, so in that sense as well, it's probably also very calculated from her part, like you said, to do this resignation and to like send this memo on purpose, break the ministerial code on purpose, and then resign because of it.
Apparently so. And now what we're getting, of course, is all the kind of you know, far right commentators, the Dan Wootons and the Darren Grimeses of this world are saying, oh, you know, she was forced out by Liz Truss, and now it's Jeremy Hunt trying to put his people in and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, she clearly didn't want to be in there. She wanted to get out, you know, as the ship was sinking, so she can now, you know, have her own little betrayal narrative and pretend that she resigned out of principle. You know, it could not be more transparent. But, you know, we don't have a political media, even the non-far-right members of it, who are capable of looking at that and saying what it is, you know, seeing it and saying it as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I think keen listeners of the podcast will probably remember that we had an episode right towards the start of the year, I think early in January, about who the next prime minister might be. And we talked at length about Liz Truss, of course, as one of the front runners. We talked about Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak being the two main possible candidates. And of course, it did come down to them, Liz Truss winning in the end. And I mean, she's been a bit of a figure of ridicule, a bit of a meme politician herself, especially her speech about importing cheese and that being a disgrace, you know, having
pork markets
on social media. Pork markets, you know, having done the rounds on social media for several years by now already. A veteran of the, you know, like the conservative meme complex, you know, like Facebook level memes at this point. But like, I don't think anyone expected her actual... you know, time as prime minister to be as much of a meme as it has been. I mean, like, 2 days after getting into 2 days after entering office, after meeting the Queen dies. I mean, like, that's a good start, I think. You know, I think if there's any omen to have the rest of your time.
Yeah.
As leader is going to possibly go. I mean, yeah, you have like this, yeah, she herself, obviously, I mean, we mentioned this in the episode about the Queen as well. She herself, of course, an avowed Republican, at least in her younger years, you know, meeting the Queen and then the Queen dying, obviously that is in itself suspicious. You know, who knows if she's not herself an agent of the Russian state. So,
well, talking about Tim Farron, Tim Farron was tweeting today saying that she's been a deep sleeper agent for the Lib Dems to ruin the Tory government, which was, you know, as close to a bit as Tim Farron gets. But like, I think the thing with her is she's believed a lot of things over her time being involved in politics, but the one thing she believes in is that she should be prime minister. That's the only thing yeah. she believes in. And she will change, you know, she will do whatever it takes to cling on there. They're gonna have to, you know, her nail marks are gonna be down the front door of number 10 by the time they get her out.
Yeah. And I mean, sort of having entered office in a period of incredible sort of economic and political volatility, the Tories already at a massive, you know, polling deficit at that point. I mean, people did anyone really, do you think people really actually had any faith in her to maybe change things around? Because I mean,
she came into government with a negative rating, which you know, hasn't happened before, to have a new prime minister come in and be polling with a negative rating on day one of coming in. You know, Boris Johnson had a positive likability rating when he became prime minister, you know, and people tend to for a bit, not with her, not at all. So clearly the best thing to do was to go fast and hard with the most you know, extreme policies you can, you know, the straight after the Queen's died. That's a really good move.
I mean, I think that, like, and I'm absolutely not saying you got to hand it to him by any means, but do you think that if we had a Rishi Sunak prime minister, I mean, and I think that could have never happened once again, because the Tory party is just too racist to vote for a brown PM even till now. They'll have, you know, senior brown cabinet ministers, but brown PM, that's one step too far.
Certainly for the membership, because the membership are particularly racist.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, surely we wouldn't have had this much of a clown show, because, I mean, since entering, obviously, like, the most significant thing that's happened was, you know, her appointing Kwasi Kwarteng, her alleged former lover, Kwasi Kwarteng, as chancellor. And, of course, many, many speculations going around about a certain necklace that Liz Truss wears around around in public, and its implications within the BDSM community. Kwasi Kwarteng's growth plan 2020, which has been dubbed a mini budget, certainly not mini by any stretch of the imagination, you know, the biggest package of tax cuts in 50 years, lowering the base rate of tax from 20% to 19%, lifting the threshold on, let me just look it up here.
Totally removed the top rate of tax.
The 45% tax, exactly. And obviously little things like just little things like scrapping bank limits on bankers' bonuses as well. Like I was telling you, Mick, before we started recording, you know, I mean, I've said this on the podcast before as well, you know, whenever I try to sort of understand finance or economics, I feel like the more I try to understand it, the more my brain just sort of starts turning to mush and just like refuses to absorb any of it. But, you know, as you know, everyone probably has done a little bit by now, I have tried to understand a little bit of what's going on. Maybe you might be a bit more bit better equipped to explain to our listeners, anyone especially who might not be in the UK, who might only have a sort of a peripheral understanding of what's been happening here recently, of what exactly has been going on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not hugely so. I like I said to you before we start recording, if people want like a really good explanation of that, I'd go and, you know, look to some of the stuff that, like, say, Riley from Trash Future has said, or, you know, those guys, because they're pretty good on that.
The latest Trash Future episode, it is on the Kwasi Kwarteng mini budget, and it is definitely highly recommended.
But
definitely got quite a lot of technical information, as can be expected.
But yeah, my basic explanation is that it's not so much that the things that the Kwarteng budget did weren't things that the markets and bankers and investment bankers like. It's that they weren't convinced that this government would be able to do those things, to do those things credibly, or to do those things in a way that didn't leave a massive hole in the public finances, basically. And because they didn't have that confidence, the cost of government borrowing suddenly ratcheted up. And that, you know, then has a knock-on effect for interest rates and inflation. Mm-hmm. And for a certain while, the Bank of England stepped in to basically deal with the fact that the pension funds are massively over-leveraged. And, you know, there was a good chance that pension funds could collapse. And that would cause a domino effect for the whole economy. You know, one important thing, again, we were talking about before, is that to look at this is to say it is not a good thing, the power of the market to essentially stop democratic governance from working and basically say, we don't want these people, get rid of them. We have no confidence in them. But then we saw it happen with Greece. Look what happened with Greece and the IMF. We know this. It's just that there's this sort of attitude in the UK as if, well, we're special and it shouldn't happen to us. But of course it can. You know, you go back to Labour in the 70s and having to take, you know, billions of pounds in loans from the IMF, partly to do with economic mismanagement previously by the Conservatives. But, you know, I can see it coming in the future, which is what's going to happen next is that we get a Keir Starmer Labour government, and Starmer's government is going to be tarnished with the economic screw-ups of this Conservative government. And you watch, the media will make it so that people forget how we got here and just focus on the fact of, well, he hasn't fixed this, has he? That's going to happen. That's 100% going to happen. But basically, that's what happened is that a mistake that people keep making is to say, oh, the markets hated these schemes, right? It's not really that. It's that they didn't believe that those schemes could be applied by these people. They had no confidence in this government to do those things. It's not to do with them having some kind of, you know, like this weird kind of FBPE kind of way of looking at it and going, thank God the bond markets are riding in to save us. It's like, no, you know, they are not your heroes now. Bond traders are, you know, a horrible scum. Like the markets are like these terrible people. And they don't suddenly stop being terrible people because they do things, you know, that are inconvenient to the Conservative Party, because ultimately all this stuff ends up, you know, fucking the rest of us in any number of ways, because it is, you know, it's a horribly interconnected system.
Well, yeah, I mean, inflation was announced today at 10.2%. Food inflation, something like 14.6%, I believe, which is, I mean, it's like the highest rate of increase of inflation since the, like, 1980s. It's a really bad situation all around. I mean, I think anyone living in the UK has probably experienced just the drastic increase in just the cost of everything over the last year.
And the other thing that is happening is, of course, if you watch, it's that I wrote about this earlier in the week. If you watch what's happening with the media again, they're locking into this idea that the only feasible policies I hate this thing of a return to austerity. I think it's better to say a retrenchment of austerity, because I don't think austerity ever went away.
Austerity never ended, of course.
No, and I hate the way we talk about it, because if you read in the press talk about the return of austerity, it never went away. For people at the bottom, it's never gone away. It's ebbed and flowed, but it's always been there. And I think what we've got to now is, again,
it's been austerity since 19. Like since the Thatcher government.
Yeah, exactly. To people in the most, you know, suffering the most, it has been there the whole time. And of course, when we'll say this, and if you have people who are kind of still Blair stans, they'll say, oh, what about Sure Start? What about, you know, and you just go, yeah, but also what about, you know, incredible authoritarian policies towards the young? Under the Blair governments, the way that you know,
the privatisation of railways, and the privatisation of education, all of this stuff,
the hollowing out of the state, and we're currently at this point where there's nothing really left to privatise, and they're gonna really turn the screws again. And you read the press, and you see them saying there are no other options. And the problem with that, of course, is we've got a Labour Party who fully accept that. You know, talking about Suella Braverman, you know, we had Rachel Reeves saying, yeah, the trouble with the Home Secretary, this is last week, the Home Secretary and the Tories is they're not deporting enough people.
Yeah.
That's what she said. That was her problem with the policies. Horrific policies. Their policy is your cruelty is not efficient enough. We will be more efficient. Our brutality will have better filed forms.
I'm fairly sure I remember Yvette Cooper saying something along the similar lines, especially when the policy was actually announced under Preeti Patel. Yeah, I mean, speaking of the sort of media response to a lot of this stuff, I mean, what's been fascinating is like seeing all of the IEA and ASI shills in the like the right wing press, who when Kwarteng announced his budget were just absolutely creaming themselves because this is like the dreamland fantasy budget for all of these libertarian nerds, because it was just like tax cuts upon tax cuts, no intervention, and I mean, once again, like you said, you're absolutely correct that I think we should not be fawning over the fact that the markets have decided to basically oust a government. But also just the fact that, yeah, like these policies that these people have like sort of believed in fundamentally their entire lives, they, you know, announce them, and then it turns out that they're absolute dog shit, and they make the entire country tank.
Yeah, and but the unfortunate side of that is that they're still being quoted in the press. They're still like the IAA is still being quoted as if it is a credible source
Oh yeah.
constantly. You know,
Oh yeah, and the best part is like that these all of these same people, once the you know, the pound crashed and the whole, you know, the pension funds looked like they were going to collapse and the whole system looked like it was on the verge of collapsing. All these people started saying, "This is terrible. How the hell did we get here? This is appalling. These people are awful." And as if we can't read their fucking columns from like a week ago.
The IEA's new angle is that the economy was already broken and Liz Truss didn't break it. It was already broken and it was broken because of this, that, and the other, which it was, but not in a way that the
Sure,
IEA
sure.
had any problem
Yeah.
with previously.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you look at, but what is going to happen now is we're going to get the what's happening is we're getting the right wing version of true communism has never been tried, right? Which is like what we're getting is true Brexit's never been tried,
Yeah.
true versions of the IEA and ASI policies have never been tried. That is the angle that you'll get now. You know.
True capitalism has never been tried is basically a line that all of these people say anyway, right? I
Yeah, exactly.
mean,
It's like
as soon as you have like, oh, this is corporatism. It's not capitalism. Oh, it's crony capitalism. It's not capitalism. It's a state-supported capitalism. It's not capitalism. I mean, they'll find any other fucking words to try to
Yeah,
describe it.
and crony capitalism is capitalism. Like,
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
it's like it's like when, you know, corruption gets rebranded as chumocracy. Like, no, sorry, the rebranding doesn't work. It's the same thing. We know that it's clear to see and tell that.
No, it's only corruption when it's brown people that do it.
Yeah,
But
and it's
yeah.
why we're getting this thing of the other. You know, it's another side point, but it's horrendous. It's the number of so-called, you know, center of people who identify themselves as center or center left people, right? Bringing out the old Banana Republic stuff and talking about, oh, this is the kind of thing that happens in South
Yeah.
America. And you sort of want to go, well, firstly,
Yeah.
Banana Republic is a hugely racist thing to say. And like, how is this not obvious to you of that? And also, you're missing out the factor with South America of, you know, the fact that, the US and UK governments, many other Western governments, you know, funded death squads there and have been
Of
well
course.
involved in causing that to happen. So, oh, a little of it's happening at back where we are, and we're meant to sort of act as if which doesn't happen here. So it doesn't happen here because we're usually doing it over there.
Oh yeah, it was the exact same thing with the death of the Queen as well, and like the whole the absolute, you know, strict media line and the forced grieving, and everyone was like, "Oh, this is just like North Korea," and it's like, no, this is exactly like Britain. This is exactly what Britain was always going to do in a
Yeah.
situation like this. And just the fact that, you know, like in with regards to the market, like you're saying, I guess because Britain has at least up until recently and possibly still is, I don't know what the full long-term consequences of this are, a financial superpower, you know, it kind of considered itself outside of the rules of the global market that like the normal people have to abide by, and that they would have to you know, be subjected to, like you were saying. And when those same rules of the market end up actually fucking with it, I think that that's where you've seen the source of a lot of the surprise as well, especially from the right-wing commentariat, you know, like the free market fundamentalists within the media. But I mean, I think it is also worth mentioning as well, obviously, that like Kwasi Kwarteng himself, you know, who has an investment banking background. I mean, like so many of the fucking Tories do. But he attended a dinner with a bunch of Tory donors and a bunch of hedge fund managers on the same night that he announced the mini budget. It was at the house of this Tory party donor called Andrew Law. And obviously, I mean, this story was leaked by the Sunday Times, so it's very clear that it's the Murdoch press basically, you know, making a scapegoat out of Kwarteng. Because, I mean, if there is, you know, collusion between the city and the Tory party, which there absolutely 100% is, it's Kwarteng is certainly not the only person doing it. It's like,
yeah, and Kwarteng used to work for Crispin O'Day, who is one of the largest, who had a huge position short selling the pound and made huge amounts from that. But Crispin O'Day during the mini budget as well. But the point with that. The thing about that is I think that my view on it is I don't think Kwarteng sort of knew he was colluding with them as such, other than that they need to suck up to them for money. I think Crispin O'Day is quite capable on his own of looking at what these people are doing, which he's been, you know, encouraging them to do, and thinking, yeah, I'm going to short this because this is going to go absolutely appallingly badly. But I don't think Kwarteng said, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to tank the market, because that's a kind of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, stood there near the wall with all the bits of string way of looking at it. I think it's like a bit more simple than that, which is like, you know, the short sellers encourage this stuff, but Kwarteng's not like involved in the big, because what does his benefit from that is what he, that's the end of his political career for a good while. Yeah. And he'll go off and make a load of money, but he is humiliated. You know,
he's the second shortest serving chancellor in the post-war era, 38 days.
Suella Braverman now, at 43 days. the second shortest serving chancellor ever. The last
Home Secretary, the second
Home Secretary ever. The last one being in 1783. some people have been saying, oh, that Wellington only lasted a month as Home Secretary. But the difference with that was that when the Duke of Wellington was Home Secretary, he was also Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary, because it was a government where there was no cabinet. So anyway, but I don't know, these facts, why are they in my head? It's just pointless, isn't it? Like, imagine I could have real useful things in my brain, but there we go. Anyway, I don't think they intended to crash the market. I really don't. I mean, I think that's, you look at that and you go, well, it doesn't, that doesn't make sense. It's a fun way to think about it, but the way of thinking that, like that, is a little bit like all these kind of lib journalists who think that the Russians are behind literally everything goes wrong. And I try not to get into that conspiracy mindset, despite the fact that I've just been saying Braverman definitely got herself deliberately chucked out of government. But then the evidence for that is her own resignation letter. Like, if you read it, you just go, yeah, definitely that's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's a bit sort of like FVP QAnon kind of stuff, isn't it? But at the same time, I think it is interesting as well to kind of see how, like, even in the face of like these catastrophic financial downturns, which are almost like, you know, like natural disasters,
that
we are subject to, right? Like, I mean, these things seem totally out of the control of at least the average person, and they are.
Yeah, there are the effects on us. We are just subject to the whims of the gods, almost. Like it is, yeah. Like
to the ungodly forces of capital. The fact that you have these people like Chris Pinotti, you know, who are gonna sit there every single time that this happens, they're going to fucking make a fortune off of other people's misery. The fact that, and every single day that this stuff passes, I mean, people are going to die this winter. People already are, by the policies of this government, you know? I mean, like the fact that Labour is sort of like salivating its prospects of like getting into power because the Tories have self-destructed so catastrophically, which I don't think even really anyone predicted that it would be like this bad. I mean, for what? I mean, like every single day that it passes, that this goes on, people are dying, right? I mean, people are literally, or they're being made destitute, or they're being put out onto the streets. And, you know, what's even more depressing in a way is the fact that, like, once there is a total economic crash as well, that you could basically essentially sell off all of your whatever is left and privatize the remaining corpse of the welfare state anyway, right? So that seems to be like the most likely direction that we're headed, or am I completely wrong? Am I being way too?
You're right. No, I think you're right. This is what I was going to say is that I think the really like upsetting reality of this is capital wins. Capital mm-hmm. wins. Even like now, it doesn't really matter. Like because the party of capital is the Tories and Labour Party. They're both the party of capital. If you look around the Labour Party conference and the way a lot of the things that they were briefing out to papers like The Guardian was, look at this, big business is coming back to our conference. They really want to talk to us. They're buying stands mm-hmm. up. They're donating again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing that because they want to lock in their sway over the Labour Party and to ensure that the Labour Party is also a party of capital. There is no party of the workers. Mm-hmm. You know, again, coming back to the Queen thing, it's this thing of Kevin Maguire was on TV around the time of the Labour Party conference saying, of course, you know, Labour has always been a party of monarchy. And it's like, no, the first leader of the Labour Party, you know, Keir Hardie, was very much anti-monarchist, making anti-monarchy yeah. speeches in Parliament. Mm-hmm. You know, to great upset at the time. But now there's this pretense of history of like, oh, no, you know, it's always been a party that sings the national anthem and is firmly behind the Queen and is the party of capital. So there is no workers' party. There is no party that cares about the working class the working classes that as they exist in reality now, rather than in a, you know, the fever dreams of a John Harris Guardian column. And that's the reality. So what we get and what is happening now when you look at the newspapers is that they're pushing us to this thing again of saying austerity is the only answer, the only policies are this. Labour are in a trap now where they will have to commit to Tory spending. Just as the Blair government did in the run up to 1997, the Labour Party then said we'll stick to Tory spending limits. But the difference that the incoming Blair administration had, though, is that because Black Wednesday happened when it did, and the crashes of the early years of the major government happened when they did, the economy was on an uptick when the last mm-hmm. Labour government were coming in. So they could ride that out quite a bit, and that gave them a lot more leeway to look good. Starmer's not going to have that, but he's still going to try and act like the Blair government did. And it's going to be even worse. You know, it's like, it's going to be appalling because we're going to be told what will happen. And I hate to make a prediction, but I know it. Is what will happen is we will have a Starmer government saying, well, we cannot afford the NHS as it is. We just can't afford it. It's not possible. Yeah. And mm-hmm. the private health lobbyists, you know, many of whom have been donating to the shadow health secretary. Look at his, look at his declarations.
Who is the new shadow? Who's the shadow health secretary?
Wes Streeting.
Oh.
So
yeah, I forgot about that.
That's where we are. And so the only thing that Labour will only be allowed to be seen as competent if they essentially come in and do what the papers wanted the Tories to do, but a bit more quietly, with a few less fuck ups. That's what we're getting, and it's. I can't remember the exact wording of that meme, but there's that meme that goes around about how, what has to happen is the Tories are in for years, they crash everything, Labourers are allowed to come back in to do a bit of tidying up, and then the Tories come back in again. And that cycle's just replaying itself. And my God, it just makes, I keep thinking to myself, why do I feel so sick and tired? And it's because I look at this and think, it's happening again. And constantly, if you say, this is happening, you get people on Twitter or wherever saying, oh, well, I suppose you just want the Tories to stay in, do you? It's like, no, I just want there to be a new government that would do something differently. And I don't believe that. And just because you want me to say, oh, it's great because we might have the Tories out. It's like, and then what? More Tories?
I mean, we're talking about the Labour Party under Keir Starmer being sort of... on the verge of government, because especially one poll recently, I think the Redfield and Wilton poll, which came out a couple of days ago, it projected Labour to have 515 seats and the Conservatives to have 22 if there was a general election called tomorrow. And this would, of course, leave the Lib Dems as the leading opposition party with 47 seats. But it would all but essentially wipe out the Tories. Now, I don't know how accurate this poll is.
I don't think that level of poll will happen insofar as that level of, wipeout will happen insofar as. There have been previous times that it looked like that would happen. In the midpoint of Labour years, there were times when the polling suggested something like that would happen, and then it falls back. Once you get to a general election, it falls back a bit. But I think it would end up being. I think we are on course for a large Labour majority, and that's a dangerous thing. When we have these huge majorities, it's not a good thing because. We end up with very little effective opposition, very little effective internal opposition in the governing party, and it doesn't create prime ministers who are afraid or cautious about the things they do. Look at Thatcher, look at Blair. These things, it's not healthy for the country. And Starmer is a man with clear authoritarian tendencies. We know this from when he was DPP. I don't know why these
the man is a deep state agent. Let's not beat around the bush.
He's fully a man of the establishment. And the notion that people say, he acted for the McLibel trial in the McLibel trial case, or he believed these things when he was a student. So he may or may not have been very earnest in those things back when he did. But I think the point that it changes for him is when he goes and works in Northern Ireland, and when he goes and when he becomes DPP. And when he becomes Sir Keir Starmer, he fully is a
man of the state,
dyed-in-the-wool believer of the state and the power of the state and the establishment and the status quo. And I can't see people look at this and say, "Oh, he'll be radical when he gets in." It's just honestly like being tricked at three, like people who will play a game of three card Monty. It's just. Unbearably.
I mean, without
naive.
Naming names, you have certain left commentators saying, "Do I believe that he's going to implement any of these policies? No, but I still think it's the right. I still think it's the right direction." I mean, it's like, how can you possibly be excited about this guy? I'm sorry. Like, I mean, maybe that's a bad faith reading. Maybe they're not being excited. But that's the thing. Like, how can you be excited?
Well, I think there's a certain thing amongst columnists who are centre-left type columnists is that they think, well, if we get a Labour government come in, or when we do, I think it is when, I want to make sure I've got my access. You know, I want to make sure I've got my, I can get what I need out of that government. You know, I think it's very self-serving.
I mean, it really is. That's just as cynical as that, probably. But I mean, regarding the Labour Party's authoritarian tendencies as well, I mean, obviously, in recent weeks, we've also seen, with regards to the selections for the candidates for the next general election, several left-wing candidates being blocked from running, including most egregiously, of course, former MP of Kensington, Kensington North. Former MP of Kensington, sorry, Emma Dent Code, who was a longtime councillor and a, you know, community organizer, especially in North Kensington, where the Grenfell tragedy happened, and she was very sort of involved with a lot of that stuff, very well loved within the local community as well. Her seat was lost by a mere, I think, what, like 20 votes or something like that, like an absolute hair's breadth margin.
And down to Lib Dem. Sam Lib Dem, former Labour stuff. Exactly.
Colluding to like do this whole fucking, you know, tactical voting, Remain alliance nonsense, and that was probably like the most heartbreaking result of what was already an incredibly, you know, tragic and fucking, you know, traumatic night. And she was in the running to be, she put her name in to be in the running for the next Labour MP in Kensington again. She's been blocked.
And they bounced her out for previously liking a post by a green candidate or something in the past, some other just like completely confected stuff. And it's also been happening to you know, that happened to other candidates, and they and it's very clear that they're also doing it to push out black and brown candidates. That's happening.
Maurice McLeod, another one, most recently as well. There's other names that I just can't think of off the top of my head right now.
I think there's something very interesting going on as well with all these assumptions in the mainstream press around. Oh, well, Labour's got the, for instance, you know, the assumption that's always there that Labour's got the black vote, like, locked in, right? But stuff they're doing, like the Maurice McLeod thing, the voice was saying, we're going to be looking into the Labour Party and what's been happening here. There is going to be issues coming for the Labour Party if it keeps treating communities like it just thinks it can assume it can it can keep those communities. But inner city inner city London is just locked down for them. The black communities is locked down for them. The young are locked down for them. Because we have no other. I say we, the young. I'm cruising towards 39. I'm no longer the young, but formerly of the young.
Young at heart.
But you know, demographically, I cease to occupy that plot. But
geriatric millennial, I think they call
it. Yeah, that
right?
is exactly what I am, and I feel more geriatric millennial every day. But that is the I wonder how much damage is going to be from that, and the attitude of like, oh, we'll do, because polls are not. That's the other thing, you know, polls are polls, right? But we've seen in the past that polls can be wrong. The notion that we won't get a 1992 is based around Liz Truss being in charge, right?
Yeah.
But what if the Tories manage to put someone in who the media decides to get behind and say, "Oh well, this person is strong and stable."
And essentially, they've got that guy in Jeremy Hunt. Like, this is the guy that the media have wanted in charge for God knows how long.
Yeah,
they've got their guy now.
The thing that makes that hard is that the good proportion of the Tory party despise him. You know, with a thousand sons. So that makes that quite difficult. Even though the Labrador political media
is he still seen as a Remainer? Is that what it is?
Well, I think he's just a bit like Mr. Smoothie, former Cameron kind of era. Like, yeah. I also think he, you know, Charterhouse boy, public school boy. The problem with, of course, they've got no problem with public school boys, but I think Hunt's issue has always been he kind of like feels destined to rule and has had that kind of attitude. And I feel like the Tory party generally is kind of sort of, they had that with the Cameron years and they kind of can't be arsed with that anymore. And also, just, you know, he's not, I don't know, political reporters will do that thing of saying, oh, he's not good at working the tea rooms or whatever. Just think people think he's a wanker, and even Tories think he's a wanker, which is like, imagine the level of a wanker you've got to be that even the Tories think, oh, he's a bit much of, too much of a wanker for me.
Yeah, I mean,
but look, who knows?
Maybe Liz Truss is gonna ride it out. Maybe she's gonna fucking ride it out.
I think even now, as we're talking, you know, she could be not riding it out. I could well imagine like pressing the stop button on this recording and going, oh fuck, you know.
I mean, it does seem very unlikely at this point. That is a given.
The levels of not wanting to predict things that I've reached is like,
yeah.
I think there's a very good chance Rishi Sunak could be installed as Prime Minister. A very good chance that could happen. Just on the basis of, hey, you know, he won amongst the MPs. Yeah, and he won amongst the MPs. Like, the MPs wanted him. But I mean, there's even the outside chance, and I mean, I think it's unlikely, but the outside chance that they go, well, Boris Johnson was elected by the country, and you know when he left...
Hashtag bring back Boris.
But you know, when he left office, Labour weren't that much ahead in the polls. Not an impossibly high amount. And the way you could, you know... I mean, they should hire me as a.
But the thing is, Boris was ousted by the media who had turned all their knives on him, and they decided they'd had enough, he was ousted in disgrace.
But the trouble is now, all the
PR disaster.
Yeah, but there are people in the media who are already saying, well, maybe we shouldn't have got rid of him. Maybe we shouldn't have got rid of him. And the other thing that the Tories could do...
You don't know what you have until it's gone.
Yeah, they could quite convincingly go down the line of saying, well, look, now we've seen all the things that can go wrong, don't you think that the Partygate thing wasn't too bad? Because, you know, and on a scale of
like potentially crashing the entire fucking economy, maybe having a couple of drinks during COVID was like not as bad of a thing.
Yeah, of course it was, when you to put it into context, like the importance of it is huge, and also they're trying to, you know.
No, I'm saying that this might be the line that they end up spinning.
No, I'm just saying, like, of course, before anyone thinks I'm saying otherwise, of course it was, but I could see, you know, we know how deranged, you know, the political and media class of this country are. And we also know how many people, like, honestly, go and talk to people out in the world, and you'll find a disturbingly large number of people who say, well, Boris, they did for him, didn't they? He wasn't too bad. He meant well. They already people saying that. I could see, and, you know, imagine that. It's like the most deranged timeline. Is he comes back in and we get a 1992 type result with everyone going, what? How the fuck did that happen? But more.
Let me look at Boris's popularity right now. Boris Johnson, Boris Johnson popularity. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Wouldn't there be a more recent one than like since after he's become PM? Because right now Liz Truss has the lowest. I mean, like she has a lower
YouGov's current
popularity than Prince Andrew, I believe.
Yeah,
I
think that's what was YouGov's going on today. YouGov's current tracker for Boris Johnson. Fame 98%, popularity 30%, dislike 51%, neutral 17%. So, you know. He's not doing, compared to Liz Truss, doing not that badly in comparison. And who tops the list of people that the Conservative Party members would want to see take over if Liz Truss resigned? Boris Johnson. 32% with Sunak in second and Wallace and Penny Mordaunt and Kemi Badenoch afterwards. And Jeremy Hunt down at 7%, just above Suella Braverman with 3%, and Nadeem Zahawi was 1%. Also, 1% of people, the real headbangers, would love to see Michael Gove. What percentage would like Grant Shapps? Zero. Nobody. The dial.
Grant
Shapps,
who has been named as the new home as the new Home Secretary.
Exactly. Grant Shapps, who was fired by Liz Truss, and she said to him, "Yeah, you're the best communicator in cabinet, but you didn't vote for me, so you're fired." And then she's had to bring him back in.
But I personally think that if the Tory party really want what's best for them and want to sort things out, then they should bring in the one true voice of reason. And that is, of course, Rory Stewart. Because we know that Rory Stewart will, if anyone within that party is going to sort things out, it will be him.
The good Tory, Rory Stewart.
Exactly. Yeah. Rory Stewart or Tom Tugendhat. Between the two of them, I'm pretty sure that they could do a bang up job.
Maybe restore a kind some, of fly
restore some
style
sense into, into politics again.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think that, you know, we'd get like a super MI6 agent who
Rory Stewart can get his pal Alistair Campbell to come and do press. Since they do a podcast together.
Exactly. It's Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell, they have a podcast together, don't they?
Yeah, they call called The Rest Is Politics.
What's it called?
The Rest Is Politics.
Oh my
it's
God.
It's the second worst podcast currently being recorded.
What's the worst?
Matt Ford's. It was said earlier on. Someone was quoting something that Grant Shapps said on Matt Ford's podcast the other week, and I fully believe if you've appeared on Matt Ford's podcast, it should be a disqualifying factor for high office. Just immediately, unfortunately, you know, you can't be a minister. You've been on Matt Ford's podcast, and the great thing about that theory is it would disqualify Keir Starmer as well.
Well, good, as he should be disqualified,
and Rachel Reeves. The world's most boring woman.
And she's also just terrible as well. I mean, she's consistently voted for benefit cuts and...
When she was in Miliband's shadow cabinet, she you know, famously made big comments about how Labour would be even tougher than the Tories on benefit claimants. So, great. And I fully think she still believes that. More so even. So great. Yeah, I love to be the voice of joy, really. it's more depressing.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's just really kind of every time we do an episode on UK politics, it just feels like an increasingly, you know, larger chunk of my brain has been like dissolved in like hydrochloric acid.
Yeah, last time I was on, I got to slag off music journalists and it was way better.
That was a lot more fun, wasn't it? It was a lot more entertaining. I promise, Mick, next time you're on, we'll talk about something more entertaining.
The thing about trusting is, like, ultimately, I what we're being told now is, oh, this is kind
she,
of...
She clearly has a thing for public humiliation. I wonder what it is.
Yeah, curious.
Anyway.
But I do, I think we're being told this is as worse as it can get, and it's not. It can get worse. And it will get worse, I think, you know, because actually I think it will be worse when we get Labour in some respects, because what will happen is even the minor levels of, accountability that are being held and actually looking into what they're doing will go for a little while, because the Tory press will be, you know, just wrung out dry. And then the papers that will naturally back Labour will just pretend for a while that everything's great. We'll get a load of, Cool Britannia too as well. I guarantee you that comes back.
I mean, that's essentially already is, they're running the greatest hits all over again already.
Yeah.
But what's, I think, also worth mentioning is the fact that I mean, we've seen what the global economy, and I mean the British economy in specific as well, you know, how much it buckles and kind of how volatile it is in the face of something like COVID, and then afterwards in the face of, yeah, like the disruptions to the global gas market and so on. I think, especially, I mean, in the coming years, what we're almost definitely going to see is the effects of climate change also becoming increasingly more severe. And the impact that that's going to have on the global economy is, once again, completely unforeseeable, but it's certainly not going to be good. That much is a guarantee. But, I mean, it's like Labour, that's the future that the Labour government is going to be coming into. And once again, I mean, we're talking about this Labour government coming in, and I'm still talking about it with a certain sense of trepidation and hesitation, because we still don't have an actual, you know, general election due until 2025, I believe, or like January 2025, I think that's
2024. 2024.
I thought, I mean, either like late 2024 or early 2025, I believe, like that's when it was slated for. But like, I mean, obviously there is a chance that there is an earlier general election call before that. But I mean, especially right now with the polls as it stands, I mean,
it cannot be any later than January 2025.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Tories, the majority of them stand to lose their jobs, so they're not going to, you know, be baying for a general election anytime soon. And they're going to do their best to try to, like, stabilise their reputation in whatever way they can. I mean, Jeremy...
We are going to see some...
Done a U-turn. I mean, he's basically reversed on all of the major policies. Well, all of the policies, basically, from the mini-budget anyway, right? And the pound has, like, somewhat stabilised against the dollar as well. But, yeah, what were you going to say as well?
We'll get some defections. We'll get some defections as well. And Labour will happily take them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what was it? Christian Wakeford. He was the first one, right?
Yeah. And yesterday we had a flyer with Alistair Campbell interviewing Johnny Mercer and the potential that Johnny Mercer might defect to Labour. Johnny Mercer, a defender of people I can say one of them, Dennis Hutchins, who is dead now, so I can't libel him, did shoot a man with special educational needs in the back, and he died when he was finally going to be on trial for doing that in the 70s. And Johnny Mercer was flew over there with him to help in his defence.
On Bloody Sunday, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't on. It wasn't on Bloody Sunday.
This wasn't Bloody Sunday. Okay.
No, it was some a man called John Pat Cunningham who was a he was a guy who basically had at the time they said he had a mental age of between about 6 and 7, and he had a real fear of men in uniforms, essentially.
Yeah.
And he ran from British Patrol, and he was running across the field. They got out, pursued him, and he was shot multiple times in the back. Just horrendous, horrendous. And of course, the British media fully got behind Dennis Hutchins, and you know, all the horrible things he's being put through as a grandfather and all this kind of stuff. No thought to the family of, you know, John Pat Cunningham, who spent all those years with no justice. And that is you know, the case that Johnny Mercer fully involved himself in, and he's the kind of person, I guarantee you, who the Labour Party will look at and go, brilliant, yeah, let's get him to defect, because,
it's a party of cops and war criminals. I mean, I think that's very appropriate, to be honest. I mean, considering that, like, Keir Starmer whipped Abstain on, like, the Spy Cops Bill and the Overseas Forces Bill, you know, like, it's hardly a surprise that, you know, someone like Johnny Mercer would be top on their headhunting list, right? Fantastic stuff, you know. I look forward to what the Plymouth Herald says about Johnny
Mercer. In the comments section of the Plymouth Herald. Oh, by the way, in the letters section. He still hasn't deleted that tweet, which is amazing to me. I wish I had something more positive to say. Someone said to me the other day, oh well, what what do we have to, like, what do we have to do then? And I just, you know, I think the only thing we can and have to do is obviously back unions, back community organizing, back groups that are politically active outside of the major parties, because all we can do when that Labour government comes in is put as much pressure on them as possible in any way we can. And I you know, people who are acting,
throw,
like,
soup on paintings. I mean,
yeah, do it.
block some fucking bridges. I mean, the environmental groups are doing more action than pretty much anyone else. The environmental groups and trade unions are doing more than anyone else right now. So I think that.
But you know, this aren't, you know, these kind of
people to take inspiration from.
Exactly, and these people who are really, you know, these kind of really soft-minded people who keep saying, "Oh, it'll be fine when we get a Labour government." It's like, yeah, but it's not that though, is it? It's not. What they mean is, it will be great because I won't have to think about it anymore. You know, the people who say that are the people who think, well, I'll be comfortable enough if I get a Labour government. That things won't be, you know. It's like people who say, oh, I can't wait till political news is boring again. Political news has never been boring. It's only that it didn't affect their lives. That's what they mean. And even there,
I think they're deluded. I mean, because it will affect their fucking lives moving forward.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's moving out of this unscathed. You know, like, there was a middle class that came out of, like, the recession that relatively, you know, like, I mean, they might have, like, lost some savings here and there, but, like, in terms of, like, a real material impact on their day-to-day lives, they didn't feel it in the way that, like, a lot of people did, like, in the way that they, like, lost their livelihoods and their homes. But I think in this situation, I think we're going to see far fewer people escaping it, just in terms of, like, inflation being as high as it is. I mean, it's completely unsustainable. Completely fucking unsustainable.
Oh, well, there's a huge chunk of that middle class who are going to lose their homes. Huge chunk of them. Because they're running on mortgages that are just, you know, that work in a 1 to 2% interest rate world, but don't work in a 10 to 15% interest rate world. You know, £500,000 mortgages. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't see, there's no solutions from Labour on how to fix that. There's no big solutions. It's just, it's going to hurt. Yeah, it's going to hurt.
It's going to be austerity. It's going to be more public cuts. And it's going to be the ultimate final privatization of the NHS. It's going to happen under a Labour government. That's going to be the biggest irony of it. It's going to be really tragic.
Yeah, and the only difference is that they'll do it with an expression on their face that says, you know, I'm sorry to see this happen. Like, someone...
It's like the Wesley Snipes, you know, like, crying as he's about to shoot you, you know.
Well, there was this thing the other day where, I can't remember who wrote it, but someone had written that, you know, Jeremy Hunt has this tone of, like, a vet that's having to tell you, you know, bad news. And I just said, if Jeremy Hunt is the vet who's telling you he's having to put your, you know, your dearly loved family pet down, Rachel Reeves is the vet that does that, but then tells you that they went to live on a farm far away. Like, you know, all we're going to get with Labour is a slightly more teary-eyed announcement that, unfortunately, you know, the NHS is now dead. They'll just pretend to be sorry about it.
Yeah. Wes Streeting is going to wax lyrical about the NHS while announcing its final closure.
Yeah, the NHS saved my life, he'll say, but unfortunately, we cannot afford it for it to save yours.
We have run out of lives to save with the NHS. So sorry. On that really bright note, I think, you know, I think we can probably sort of, like, wrap things up. Like I said, today's been a bit more of a freestyle kind of episode. I was trying to write notes, but then, like, writing notes about this stuff,
nothing would stay still.
Yeah, I mean, and like, those notes would be outdated by the time we recorded anyway.
Well, yeah, about an hour before the show, I just messaged you and said, we're going to have to talk about Braverman.
I guess
we'll
have to talk about Braverman. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming back on. Would you like to plug any social media or do you have any shout outs or anything else before we go?
Yeah, I just if you're interested in anything I do, just go to Broken Bottle Boy on Twitter, and the link to my newsletter is there and stuff. Yeah, it's free to get it, and it's about the media. I write about do media criticism about 3 times a week. Yeah, if you like it, sign up. I'd appreciate it.
Man with the best work ethic in UK media, UK political journalism, and I mean that with full sincerity. Up in like absurd amount of hours.
It's a fully disorder.
But you're putting it to good use, mate. You're putting it to good use.
Yeah, I guess. Very
highly worth reading. I definitely recommend everyone to check out Mick's work and his very, very good newsletter. As always, I'm Arjan at Arjanistan on Twitter. We're at Leftover Pod on Twitter, patreon.com/leftoverpod as well. Massive thanks to all of our supporters as always. Huge thanks to Connor for production. Big thanks to Cardio for the music. If you want to support what we do, if you like what we do as well and want to support us, you can always head over to our Patreon as well and sign up, and you get some bonus content every month as well, two bonus episodes every month, so keep an eye out for that. Once again, a massive thanks. It's been about a month now that we've resumed episodes, and it feels good to sort of be back as well and back in a rhythm. So a massive thanks once again to all of our supporters just for listening and for all of your support through all of this time. Huge thanks as always, and we'll catch you all next time. Cheers. Sha-na-na-na, sha-na-na-na.